podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
City Ad Chronicles is a Media Chronicles production.
I'm in a very bad mood.
Okay.
Let's do a podcast.
Let's do a podcast. In the wise words of Nikki Bandini, be honest. If you're upset, be honest. So, welcome to another episode of I Hate Football with me, Nozuki. No, I'm just kidding. It's the Serie A Chronicles, and I'm your host for today, Mina Rizuki. And as always, I'm joined by the wonderful Nikki Bandini.
You misunderstood me, Mina. Be honest about yourself. Don't throw me under the bus. That's what you misunderstood.
Well, it was your advice for me to be honest, so I'm being honest.
Be honest until I get thrown under the bus, then change it.
Okay. I'll figure all of that out for next time. But I'm just going to give you guys just a sort of warning over here. If you are going to listen into this, there's going to be a little bit of upset. We're going to try to put some meat on the bones for what's going on with Juventus, present you with the facts. They will be without opinion because as journalists, we present the facts and you are the one who decides on your opinion on what this is and what's happening. We will obviously chat about it ourselves, but we will then go on to the games. Not all of the games have been played. Obviously, as you know, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. Inter are yet to play against Empoli. And obviously, the big match between Lazio and Milan will be tomorrow. That's on Tuesday evening. So this podcast will be a lot about Juventus, unfortunately. And I think one of the main things that's bothered me about all of this is that I've had to field calls about the scandals that continue to envelop Italian football. And I'm a little bit tired of having to defend this league now. And it's always being referred to as just another scandal. And it's a sad place to be where this is, somebody who's grown up watching Italian football and been so in love with Serie A that it is a sad that we have reached this place where I just feel like every 10 years or so, we have to talk about what's going on. And sometimes it's not even 10 years, unfortunately. Sometimes it happens far too often. But as you all know, Juventus have been docked 15 points. They now lie in ninth place after the draw against Atalanta. There's been a lot of talk about whether or not this is the tip of the iceberg. We obviously have the wonderful Nikki with a voice note that clearly explains everything. She has tried as much as possible to just give you the things that you need to understand about this topic, where Juventus stand, why they were the ones that were punished and seemingly not the other clubs, what will happen with the criminal investigation, how this affects them in UEFA. So if you are looking for more information, it is there. Today, we will try and put some more meat on the bones as we go through this. But yes, tip of the iceberg, Nikki?
Yeah, I disagree with you that we shouldn't be allowed any opinions here. I think that's certainly part of the podcast, and opinions are what make football interesting in the end, but certainly trying to stay on the factual lines of what's happened. It's been a challenging few days journalistically because I keep getting people call me up and saying, oh, could you explain to us what's happening at Juventus? And I go, sure. And they say, okay, great. You've got 30 seconds. And you go, I can't tell you what's happening.
And you're like, I need about 3 hours.
Yeah, I can't tell you what's happening in 30 seconds because it's not a 30-second story. And that's why we ended up with a 20-minute voice note. So I guess if people want to get the simplest version I can try to give is just that this is what's happening. Maybe that's the place to start. But yeah, Juventus got docked 15 points. This is a decision passed down by the Italian Football Federation's sporting court. This is a reopening of an old case. In effect, we heard about it last year, the Plus Valenza case. Originally, there were 11 clubs brought into that case. Can't remember how many transfers, but a lot. A lot of them did involve Juventus. Last April or May, the Italian Football Federation said, okay, this is interesting stuff, but actually you can't set an objective value on a footballer. So the entire case, which is essentially that Juventus, the original case is that Juventus and other clubs were guilty of artificially inflating their balance sheets by assigning values to players in swap deals that were unrealistic. So this is where you get this word plusvalenza, which means capital gains. And the practical sort of thing that they're doing is Club A says to Club B, let's swap two players. You swap them for the same value in theory. I mean, this is a very simple version. Of course, more complicated things than this are happening. But if you swap two players the same value, both of you get to effectively write a profit on your balance sheet. And that's because when you sign a player, you can write it into your balance sheet in an amortized way, which means you can basically spread the value of that player over the full length of their contract. So if you're spending 5 million euros on a player and you're giving them a 5-year contract, the impact on this year's balance sheet is 1 million euros. It'll be 1 million euros again next season and the season after that for 5 years, but you're only paying 1 million euros on this season's balance sheet. Again, notional money, of course, you still have to work out with the club if there's actual money changing hands. But if it's a swap deal, there's no money changing hands. So it's real simple. So notional player coming in has cost you 5 million euros, so 1 million euros a year. But you've sent someone back in the other direction whose value is also 5 million euros. You don't have to spread that across 5 years. You've got that coming in right now. So according to your balance sheet, you just made 5 million euros and you only spent 1 million euros for this year. So this is the practice that creates plusvalenza, capital gains. It's really standard practice across football all over Europe. This is not exclusive to Italy. You will find this everywhere in European football. And you will find, frankly, some version of it in business, all through business. All businesses are trying to work out how to spread their expenditure and sort of assign cost over a period of years to maximize their value from it. But yes, okay, the charge against Juventus. This is what I'm saying. It's already too long, Mina. I'm already talking too long.
Okay, let's start off by saying, as in, I'm sure you guys all remember that there was this case and 11 clubs were acquitted in the plusvalenza case in April.
Yes.
At the time, the Italian Football Federation's federal prosecutor, Giuseppe Scini, wanted to reopen it, but was subsequently turned down. This is because of the evidence that was being gathered by the Turin in a separate case known as the Prisma investigation. Okay. So this is why he filed another motion for this to be heard again. At the time, it was shut down and their clubs were acquitted in April because they said and cited the difficulty of assigning objective values to footballers. If I, for example, have decided that this can of Coca-Cola is worth £10 to me because I'm desperate for a can of Coca-Cola, I will pay the £10 even though I can buy it from the shop for, say, £1. How can you actively and accurately determine the price of something? Because obviously it's always based on the basic logic of supply and demand.
This is happening with that. Have you seen that drink Prime, like all the kids are going after? So like this is actually happening. Drinks are like a good example in the real world. Yeah, like people are spending hundreds of pounds on a £1 soft drink because it's got value to them. And that's how markets work.
And it's by an influencer. And I don't know much more than that, unfortunately, because I'm not very hip.
No, need I just jump into it. I don't know.
So a parallel investigation was opened by the public prosecutor's office in Turin. And that is obviously the Prisma investigation that we know now. And that's about the Juventus's published accounts for the years 2019, 2020 and 2021. So as you know, this is about capital gains, about how much money has been assigned to each player. Now, what has happened and it's been reopened because of the evidence gathered by Turin. And that includes obviously the wiretaps, the so-called black book that belonged to Fabio Paratici, in which Cherubini has noted down different elements, such as this is a system that's being widely used and almost abused. Phone conversations between Andrea Agnelli and John Elkann, so on and so forth. So this was reopened due to new evidence. Now, part of the defense of Juventus, which is a 77-page document, highlights that what you're doing essentially is double jeopardy, because what you have presented is new evidence, i.e. the wiretaps. But what law has actually been broken? If you are saying that we have dismissed the cases of all these other clubs because we cannot definitively assign a value, an objective value to a player, then how can you say that we are breaking a law that you have also decided doesn't exist? So even if we say we are abusing a system, it is still not a system that is essentially breaking the law. That is their defense as well. And when it comes to the sporting defense, this is not the trial that will take place in March, and that is a criminal proceeding. I'm talking about simply this one right now. Obviously, the prosecutors are saying that they essentially financially doped the market because they were just inflating lots of players' values, exchanging them with other clubs, and using their wealth and power to really change what players and what their values are in the market. And they are publicly traded companies, so they are supposed to be transparent in their financial dealings, which they haven't been. Basically, they're the big bad wolf, and they're doing a lot to harm Italian football, is essentially, in many ways, the ways that it's being looked at the moment. Another part of this, in terms when it comes to Juventus's defense, is that what's interesting is the way that Inter and the Milan prosecutors have determined the fact that they shut this down, and the prosecutor refused to further investigate it because he said, how can you objectively determine what a player's value is? And because he kicked that out because of the transfers to do with Inter, they're using that as part of their defense, feeling that, you know, at this moment in time, you know, this is the main thing that you're saying that we've done wrong, but you've also agreed that there is no law that we are breaking. Just us talking about it doesn't still equate to the fact that there is a law that we are breaking. Now, the further evidence you have provided is one thing to reopen the case, but what hasn't changed is that there isn't a law that they have rediscovered. So can you open a case as in double jeopardy when what's happened is that there's new evidence, but there are no new facts? And that is the whole determination now between Italian law as to what constitutes the ability to reopen a case. Because what you have found is evidence talking more about this particular subject, perhaps even confessing to it, but still no evidence that a law has been broken because there is, again, no law. So that is the thing that we come to back to over and over again. Obviously, it's different when we then will start talking about wages and what's happening in the criminal proceedings, which is essentially potentially defrauding investors if they have indeed been, and if they are indeed found guilty of changing the amounts that were paid in salaries during COVID. We will look into that right now, but this isn't coming to that. Why were they punished so heavily? Because they did it systematically and they felt that the other clubs were just doing it, you know, on a one-off.
Can I interject here, Mina? Because I think that while what you're saying there is probably true, and that's certainly what's been reported in Gazette and everywhere else, we don't know why they've been punished because we haven't got the verdict yet. And the verdict that's is true. Not going to be out for another eight, well, I think it was
10 days.
Well, 10 days from Friday. I should be able to copy that in my head and I don't. So yeah, 10 days from Friday. So the end of this month, I should have just the date in front of me at this point. I don't. So we actually don't know. And that's sort of the point that's makes this even harder to report on, makes this even harder to sort of talk about actually is we don't have the reason given by the Football Federation yet. I find that a little bit crazy that you can release the punishment, 15-point penalty, and say, yeah, we'll let you know why in 10 days' time.
And not produce the reasons.
Because, but this is, that's just, you know, the way this system is set up. And yes, you know, we are speculating about why this might have happened. There are certainly lots of pointers. For instance, if we go to the testimony provided by Kinnear, the prosecutor, during the case presented against Juventus. But for instance, the prosecutor asked for a 9-point penalty and the penalty that was given was a 15-point penalty. So there's even within what the prosecutor asked for, there's discrepancy then with the final judgment that exceeds it. So we're all sort of on tenterhooks waiting to find out what the Italian Football Federation says about this, because it's very hard for anyone, certainly for Juventus, to know how you mount an appeal against this until you know what you've actually been sort of charged with. Now, it might be that the Italian Football Federation has an explanation that makes the double jeopardy argument look weaker, that makes this argument that there's nothing in the law look weak, because they might be citing something specific. We don't know that yet. And that's the bit that's sort
point.
Of really unclear right now, because if you want to knock this down now, this decision, there's basically two steps of justice that are the obvious steps to go to. And there's the Board of Guarantee with the Italian Olympic Committee that they have 30 days to lodge their appeal, which again seems a bit strange. You have to wait 10 days for the verdict, then you've got to get that in there, but they will. Obviously, Juventus will appeal to CONI. And the Italian Olympic Committee, CONI, they can only reverse this ruling. They can only annul it, basically. They can't modify it. They can annul it if they feel that process has been not followed correctly. So double jeopardy might be a case you could make. There has not been due process here. Like, we should not be allowed to be tried twice in the same truths twice. That's a matter of process that could be raised, which is why a lot of people are honing in on that.
Just to clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
Clarify just the fact that, yeah, it's only on process. They can either, they can't actually discuss the merits of the case or what they find guilty or not guilty. They either cancel or not.
Yes, exactly. So this is either knocks the whole thing down or waves it on, basically. And double jeopardy would be a point of process, you could argue. This is not an acceptable process. We should not be allowed to be tried twice on the same facts. The question of whether or not you could get into the there's no written down law. I mean, this is getting into the technicalities of Italian law, and I'm at the end of my expertise of whether I think they can challenge on that. We'll certainly find out from Juventus once they've seen the verdict what they think they can challenge. There is a next step after that, which is the European Court of Arbitration for Sport in Lausanne. I expect Juventus would go to that if it came to it. But this is, again, what Mina was just saying about there's a whole second thread to this Prisma investigation. Prisma investigation, in case that wasn't clear, that's conducted by the Turin prosecutors, not to do with sport at all. Prism investigation is happening. Kine, the Italian Football Federation prosecutor, says, oh, you found some interesting stuff. I'm going to bring that into my investigation and my prosecution against Juventus. So two separate things that are brought together in certain sort of parts of this ongoing legal mess that there is going on. But yes, the case about the deferred wages, I think we've talked about it on the podcast before. Juventus players, there was a public statement that during the pandemic, the Juventus players are going to give up 4 months worth of wages. And it appears that they did not give up 4 months worth of wages because it was paid back to them in bonuses of various kinds. Now, this is where we get to what Mina was just saying about.
Not all of them.
Yes.
Potentially not all of them. We don't know yet.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I probably should have hedged.
Some are reporting that Ronaldo still owed some money. Some are wondering if they're. We're still yet to know about that. That will happen on March 27th.
Yeah. And the reason that's probably the scarier part of this for a lot of people at Juventus is that is if you've reported something to the stock market and then not done it and you're a publicly listed company, that's a criminal offense. So that's very serious stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's a big mess. Again, if you want sort of the my best attempt just to distill it, the voice note is there. But yeah, it's a lot, Mina. It is a lot.
Well, what we also know is that Ronaldo's lawyers have asked to see the documents. We know that UEFA has opened an investigation because they have come to a conclusion as to how much Juventus should pay in fines and how balanced their books were according to, at the time, the information that they indeed have. This obviously now opens and begs the question, what do we know about Juventus's books? We need to start investigating. Are there further fines that we should impose? Should we throw them out of European competition if they are to actually qualify? So that's a separate thread. So just so we know, what happened on Friday is sporting justice. What will happen at the end of March is a trial for criminal proceedings that has nothing to do with sport, but rather to do with what Juventus did from salaries, capital gains, so on and so forth. And then obviously we have UEFA and all of that. UEFA is waiting to see what happens in the criminal proceedings before it makes any judgments and continues its own separate investigation. There are some things that I'm sure you heard that I don't know, or I don't know if you want a little bit more meat on the bone. Unfortunately, why people say it's the tip of the iceberg is because we know that there are other clubs who do this. One that continuously has been mentioned alongside Juventus is obviously Napoli. And so far, we know that their prosecutors have been asked for further information and something could be reopened for them, especially with the Osimhen transfer. When it comes to Juventus, we'll talk about that in greater detail in a second. When it comes to Juventus, in relation to these particular transfers, the minus 15 points, in practice, that the transfers that were investigated and that they've highlighted equates to 3.6% of revenues of what they've gained in capital gains. But then how do we objectively, give a qualitative value to what these transfers made or how much sponsorships that brought on? This becomes very messy.
I suppose that's the one thing that hasn't been said, meaning it's important. Like the reason that the Football Federation can argue that this matters is if you feel that, if the feeling is that they have been able to financially inflate their accounts, then there's a follow-on argument that you can make that Kine advanced, that that's a competitive advantage. If you are building your accounts bigger than they really are, that's a competitive advantage. And that's also why UEFA will be interested, because UEFA, of course, have their financial fair play rules. There was a settlement agreement with Juventus. If you're doing things that make your accounts look better than they really are, then that's a competitive advantage, is the argument. And as you've already said, like, of course, it takes two to tango. They aren't doing these exchange deals on their own. So if they're doing it, they're certainly not the only club doing it.
And I think that's the question that a lot of people have is, why is it Juventus and not the other teams? Like I said, right now, we can only base it on conjecture because the reasons haven't actually been defined by those that have decided to give the punishment. So until we know that, we can't speak further. But what we think we know, and one of the reasons that we think to do with that, is that, like I said, this was a systemic use. What they found afterwards was that this almost stopped happening as soon as Cherubini took charge. And so that's an interesting matter as to how Juventus' accounts looked sort of during one time and during another, which sort of says to you that this was a system that they relied on, potentially, yes, or not. And I think that's up to the defense right now to look into.
Sorry to jump in again. I mean, I think that's also an interesting... It's just an interesting part of the ruling that we also haven't even mentioned yet. Of course, there were suspensions handed out to a lot of directors past and present, and they're different lengths. And again, when we get our final verdict, we will understand why different lengths were given to different directors. We don't know that yet, but at some point we will get an explanation of at some point in the next 10 days, of why some directors have been punished more than others in this ruling.
Yes, it seems that right now the hardest hit would be Andrea Agnelli, because potentially the buck stops with him.
Paratici got the longest.
No, you're right. Was it more than it was? Well, because also if you find in most of the things, Cherubini refers to Paratici so often, yet he too has been blamed for this and offered a suspension, which puts Juventus in a very difficult situation right now, because they actually have no directors in charge that they know of, not even Cherubini, who was supposed to be the last man standing. So what they've done is bring back Francesco Calvo. I don't know if any of you remember Francesco Calvo. He was indeed married to the woman that Andrea Agnelli is since, fathered her son. Fathered her daughter, in which Seferin, the UEFA president, is the goddaughter of. And so there was this whole sort of tabloid story between Calvo losing his wife to Andrea Agnelli. And now he is back at Juventus, helping to sort of rectify the situation, coming on and providing his expertise on a sporting level to help this club through. A lot has been said about Cherubini being suspended and being punished during the transfer market, which sort of stops Juventus being able to really do anything in this transfer market with absolutely no director available to them. That is another thing that will be looked at and obviously talked about when it comes to their appeal against all of this. I guess when I was talking about my opinion, I was saying that it was just like, we'll lay down the facts. And obviously then we'll have our separate opinions based on it, or what we think will happen or what we won't think will happen. But it's lots of people have asked and said, you know, oh, so like, you know, do you defend Juventus through this, or what do you think is happening, or how do you feel about this? And I think it's not up to me to defend or say this, because it should be people looking at all the facts and then coming to their own conclusions, based on really the reasoning that we will find from the courts, from sporting justice, and indeed the criminal investigation that will happen later, and also the defense strategy of Juventus and how they look to defend themselves. There are lots of things to mention. It's you know, people have been really angry about us defending Italian football because they said don't bail out a dinosaur league was one of the things that I read. This is a terrible league that, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, one of the prosecutors for the referees was a drug smuggler, and all these types of things that I've read in the past. And this is why I said to you that, you know, welcome to I Hate Football. And I'm interested to see how this goes, because even from a UEFA point of view, I'm desperately interested to see how that goes. I would like to see what they will do about all of this more than all the others, because I want to see what their principles are and how they decide which teams should be punished and shouldn't be punished. This is particularly interesting to me as well, because UEFA obviously at one time was supposed to have a recovery fund intended to stimulate transfer market growth that happened because of COVID. Certain countries were really hard hit, obviously a lot, mainly, let's say, Italy, and it made very difficult for them to balance their books. And what they wanted to avoid was clubs essentially taking risky bets in order to provide capital for the clubs, such as selling a percentage of future broadcast revenue or commercial income to private equity funds. Who has done that? Barcelona. And because of the weakening market, and because of the fact that England had 34% ability to, more than all the other clubs, to spend money. It was a way of providing competition and healthy investments and allow clubs to sort of be a little bit more liquid during these turbulent times and ensure that it continues to do well. UEFA wanted to do it for the teams and for the clubs that were associated to their competitions. So it wasn't the minnows, it wasn't the smaller teams, it was the clubs that were taking part in their competitions in the Champions League and the Europa League, especially the likes of some Turkish clubs who were finding it very hard to really operate in the market, considering how their currency is being looked at right now and how much of a risk they are when it comes to taking out loans or extending any credit lines. So this was something that was taken on board a lot. And now what they've done is reneged on that offer. And so, and they've basically cited the reason of, you know, we don't know, this is an economy that's changing, Russia invaded Ukraine, we're not yet sure. But what they're being accused of is that a lot of clubs sort of worked with that in mind, saying we are going to get some help from UEFA, we are going to get some help from UEFA, so we're going to do what we can to stay afloat and provide competition because we're going to get help from UEFA in terms of money. And so now that's going to be looked at as well. Have UEFA put a lot of these clubs into a situation or not? Obviously, that is still to be debated. We can't accuse anyone of everything, but I'm so interested to see where that particular thread will go as well. And then obviously there's the political situation, the reputation of Italian football, the reputation of Juventus, the politics. When you were saying that they could appeal and appeal and appeal, will they? That's the question. How much are they going to go through this with the appeal? How much is the Super League a way of sort of quietening them, destroying them? Is this something that has a political involvement? Did this create divisions? You know, then there's all the conspiracy theories that we're going to talk about. So it becomes really crazy because you start to wonder, you know, what is going to happen with all of this? How many laws were indeed broken? Who are you choosing to punish and who are you not choosing to punish? Are we honestly trying to say at the moment that there's, you know, there's creative accounting in terms of sponsorships? And when you start saying, oh, we are being, you know, we are being sponsored by a club who's decided to give us $4 billion just for existing or not, you know, what's the difference from capital gains? You know, what is determined as creative accounting? Should football even have been in this position in the first place that teams have had to do this? And how much should Juventus be punished if it's a systemic problem in football in general? Maybe they should be punished a lot. I don't know. I know. I'm scared to ask for your opinion in all of this now, Nikki.
Well, I honestly feel like I, on the punishment, I'm really holding my opinion until I see the verdict, because I know it's like a cliche, but a fallback, it sounds like, but I mean it. Like I don't know how I'm supposed to have an opinion on something until I know what the reasons are. Like I understand the things that have been put in the paper and I see the sort of broad outlines of the case, but until I sort of see what your justification is for giving the penalty, it's hard for me to be able to put it into context and say, okay, that feels right or it feels wrong. My initial reaction to it was I was shocked. I didn't expect anything like this. I think nobody that I'd spoken to did expect something as strong and as punchy as this, which is another reason why I think it's really important to see what their reasons are, because they better be good ones if you can do a 15-point penalty. It clearly transforms the whole season when that happens. You know, my second sort of big feeling on it is actually the same one I saw Giampiero Gasperini say after the game against Juventus. And of course, the game ended in a 3-3 draw. Really entertaining game that we should talk about at some point. It was a 3-3 draw that probably favors Atalanta at this point, with Juventus having been had that 15-point reduction. But Gasperini afterwards wasn't sort of expressing pleasure at the situation. He said, look, when points get deducted in the middle of a season, that's never a good sign for football. And it isn't. It isn't a good sign for football if your league feels like it has to dock someone such a season-changing amount of points in the middle of a season. Now, that doesn't equally mean it's wrong to do it. If you found something that you think is, you know, beyond the pale, that's not acceptable, you have to punish it. There are rules for a reason. And that brings us back to, I need to see the reasons. I need to see the verdict. And until I've seen that, I feel like I shouldn't let myself fall too hard one way or the other. I do think it's completely reasonable of supporters of a club to look at it and go, well, hang on. Like, yes, we clearly, I mean, the wiretaps are quite damning. Like, you listen to the wiretaps and there's pretty sort of naked conversations between people in the Juventus directors making it sound like they knew they were doing things they probably shouldn't. That there's language used that says things about, you know, all the shit that's underneath and these sorts of phrases make you think, okay, that they know this isn't great. But I think it's reasonable for a fan to look at that and go, well, hang on, what about these other clubs? And that's where you do get to the situation of Napoli that gets pointed at, not necessarily for hundreds of transfers, but for a really big one, Victor Osimhen, who signs in this 70 million euro transfer in which four players are sent to Lille for a combined value of around 20 million euros. And some of them never even play for Lille. And how was that calculated? And if we're saying that's not okay, then what's going to come of that? Now, again, this is why I would urge people to not say, oh, this is conspiracy against X, Y, or Z, because Kinnear, the prosecutor, has said, oh, I want that information next. That's where he's going next. He's asked for the information from Naples. And the reality of some of this will come down to as well what's been found. We don't know what's going to turn up in those documents from Naples. Maybe nothing, in which case you can't build a case without the evidence. Whereas in Turin, they've been able to compile evidence that clearly the Italian Football Federation has found compelling. In what way they found it compelling, again, I'll just keep repeating, we don't know yet because they haven't released that yet. So my feeling on it, Mina, is it's not great that we're here again. It's not great when you're trying to sort of enjoy the football, when you're trying to have a successful league, when you're trying to have a sort of structure for ongoing success, that how many years it was on, less than 20 years on from Calciopoli, we're at another major incident involving the biggest, one of the most successful clubs in Italian football history, the most successful club domestically in Italian football history. Whose fault that is, that's where I get into the bits that I'm waiting for a verdict for, but it's not healthy for Italian football at all that we're here again.
I think my main gripe with all of it is, this is just my honest opinion, is the way that's been handled in general, and the timelines with it. What annoys me and what disturbs me is the fact that I would have liked this ruling to have come after the criminal proceedings have been exposed or talked about. If you are then going to punish, let's say, Juventus today, you do decide to reopen the Napoli case and punish them when? And so are we seeing a staggered approach to penalties potentially being handed over? Will this penalty change when we see the evidence of what happens in the criminal proceedings? Oh, wait, the wages did cause a lot of problems. Maybe we should dock them even more points. So every day, we don't know what kind of table we are waking up to.
Yeah.
Right now, but this is what disturbs me. I feel that you, when you present a case, it should be a comprehensive case that involves everyone that you want to prosecute or not, or whoever you've deemed not worthy of being prosecuted. But it should be done on the same timeline. Let's say that this was the reverse and Napoli was, and they found something that they didn't like about the way that Napoli had handled the transfers, and they want to open this investigation, and they've decided to dock them points before criminal proceedings take place. Have you just robbed them of their opportunity to win Scudetto? And if so, what have you done in determining what, and then what you then dock points next year for somebody else and the year after? So none of this is ever true. What are we actually living with? Because they're all different timelines, and that's what disturbs me at the most. I feel they've jumped the gun in all of this. Either you present a comprehensive case and that you assign blame or whatever it is, or find reasons to prosecute, but everyone equally at the same time, after all the evidence has been presented, defenses have been done, appeals have been exhausted, and then everything gets done properly, or you just wait. But right now it just looks terribly staggered. And I think that is the gripe that I have with this, most importantly.
I think that's a really valid question. Why there was the urgency to deal with this in the middle of the season, when there is a criminal case coming up in 2 months' time? I think that's a really valid question that I don't have an answer to, and I agree with you.
Because I sort of want to know what will happen with if anyone does get punished next season. So then what, Juventus will be flying because everyone will be punished? I don't understand, you know? Like, I'm saying, because Juventus have already dealt with all of their points punished, I don't know. I mean, they could well be relegated. We don't even know at this point in time, yeah? But let's just say that this 15 becomes 20 or whatever you want to say, and Juventus end up in 15th position in the club and survive. And then next season, you take on some other clubs that you decide that need also the hand of sporting justice.
then this again has changed the way that the table looks. So for me, I think this is my main issue with all of this is that it looks like every season we're going to have this issue that continues to be punished in a staggered method. So that's one thing. Again, if you do find that there is an issue with the way that capital gains has been handled, this has been spoken about for so long and for so many years in Italian football. Obviously, there was a prior case to that. And this has been talked about before because there was cases to do with capital gains. Then why haven't you found a way that we can all agree on? Perhaps not an objective way to decide what a player's value is worth, but some guidelines to give you something that can't be broken, such as if you do plan on an evaluating player and he must cost over 5 million, then make sure he plays for your club at least once. Things like that. I mean, just at the very least, a skeleton-like way of evaluating how much a player should be worth or not. You can, again, it'll be against everything that's being happened in Europe, obviously, and the way that everyone else deals with capital gains. But I do find it very odd that La Liga would demand that there are punishments, considering that Barcelona is involved in all of this, obviously, as they did trade with Juventus. I find it strange how you have some prosecutors in Milan deem this as unworthy of their time, because you cannot abuse a system that is not an established system. There's no rule that's been broken. And then have other prosecutors feel like, actually, no, this is something we need to highlight. But should we just talk about the football now?
It was a really good football game, Mina. It was a really good football game. Weirdly, after all of that, it was a really good game of football against Atlanta.
Become a member at patreon.com/Serie A Chronicles for regular bonus episodes and content. Sports Social Podcast Network.